You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 249th edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, it seems the party is over for Australia's incumbent telco, Telstra, with the federal government announcing a massive overhaul to regulations surrounding Australia's telecommunications industry. Not so long ago, Telstra's ex-CEO, Sol Trujillo, with the three amigos by his side, had Australia by the short and curlies, with the monopolistic stranglehold they had over the country. But with the changing of the guard, heralded by the arrival of the new CEO, David Thodey, came the cessation of hostilities between Telstra and the government. The Rudd government had finally put the genie back into the bottle, and this week announced a series of reforms, starting with a call to Telstra to voluntarily separate its wholesale and retail arms, a call which has been welcomed by ACCC boss Graham Samuel, who said that this was the greatest reform to the telecommunications industry in 2 to 3 decades. The reforms announced by the government last week include Telstra being asked to structurally separate or have a form of separation imposed upon it by law. If Telstra failed to separate voluntarily, it would be banned from future wireless spectrum auctions or sell off its HFC cable network or its interest in Foxtel. Amongst other reforms, the ACCC are given new powers to regulate wholesale access to Telstra's network and hand out a competition notice without prior consultation. Minister Conroy would be given exclusive power to change the requirements of the Universal Service Obligation, with a capacity to fine Telstra up to $10 million for not meeting such conditions. The ACCC would be given capacity to issue on-the-spot fines for breaches of consumer safeguards. Also, carrier licences would no longer be required for operators with revenue less than $25 million per annum. ACCC Chairman Graham Samuel was asked who are the big winners out of the proposed breakup of Telstra, consumers or shareholders?
Well, look, I can't comment upon the position of shareholders. In terms of the public interest, and that's what the ACCC is concerned with, the public interest is best served by having a truly competitive telecommunications sector. Now, this should have been the decision of governments back in 1992 when Telecom, now Telstra, was formed. It should have been the decision of governments before the Telstra privatisation took place, because that's what national competition policy demanded, which was that the public monopoly, as it then was, should not be converted into a private monopoly, which is what occurred when the privatisation occurred. And national competition policy demanded that the sort of processes that government is now undertaking should have been undertaken back then. And so what we're now seeing with yesterday's announcement is the correction of mistakes of previous governments going back as far as the early 1990s. I think it's quite clear that the proposals that have been announced by the government enhance the ability of the ACCC to deal with Telstra as an incumbent dominant player, to deal with it in a manner which ensures that competition is infused into the telecommunications industry. And that's not competition for competition's sake. It's competition for the benefit of 21 million Australian consumers.
Comparing three previously government-owned entities which have been privatised over the past 20 years, the Commonwealth Bank, Qantas and Telstra, if share prices are anything to go by, the CBA and Qantas are enjoying a positive growth, while Telstra continues to slide. Economists say that Telstra shares of any flavour, T1, T2 or T3, are quite possibly the worst investment anyone could make. Some say that this can be blamed on the uncertainty of the telecommunications sector, which, ironically, is driven by the federal government and the bloody-mindedness of the previous Telstra chain of command. While the spin the government is applying to this new regulation is painting Conroy as the most reforming communications minister for the past few decades, the reality is Conroy is still looking to filter the internet in this country and, as a result, slow the net by up to 80% in a worst-case scenario. One might ask, is Conroy Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde? Or maybe he's the new messiah of Australian telecommunications.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner looks at the hand Conroy's dealt Telstra. Google Maps now has live traffic information for Australian cities. Are we on the verge of a malware epidemic? And a Sydney hosting company to charge by the kilowatt? First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Optus is investigated for blocking calls to some phone numbers. Twitter is now valued at $1 billion US dollars. Calls for urgent reforms to the 000 emergency service and disgusting hospital food gets blogged. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman has launched an investigation into Optus after receiving complaints about the telco's decision to include a clause in its mobile contracts which allows the carrier to block access to any number it chooses. The clause says that Optus can reserve the right to block any incoming or outgoing call from or to any number for technical, operational or commercial reasons. An Optus spokesperson told Australian IT last week that a small number of Optus customers had been dialing an international call forwarding service run by another company, Mediatel, and that calls to an Australian mobile number were being routed to international destinations using voice over IP. The spokeswoman told Australian IT that Optus does not have a commercial agreement for the interconnect arrangements necessary for these calls, so Optus cannot continue to support them. Mediatel's parent company, MediaOcean, sued Optus after the telco changed its charging policy for accessing Mediatel numbers. The subsequent court battle has been joined by Vodafone Hutchison Australia, VHA, which is also suing Optus after the telco allegedly refused to pay approximately $5 million worth of interconnect fees for calls to Mediatel numbers. The two matters are now being heard together in the federal court. Technology news site TechCrunch reported last week that Twitter is closing a round of funding which will value the company at $1 billion US dollars. Twitter's chief executive, Mr. Evan Williams, told employees about the funding round, which would raise around $50 million US dollars from unnamed sources. While Twitter and other social networking sites have been hard-pressed to demonstrate viable business models, the funding news could raise the industry's credibility with investors, as did an announcement last week from Facebook, which said it was now making enough money to cover expenses. According to Reuters last week, Twitter did not immediately respond to a call seeking comment. Twitter has also revised its terms of service recently to state that Twitter could contain advertisements that, among other things, target queries made through the services. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has been told that Australians dialing 000 for emergency assistance are being disadvantaged by a lack of location-based service technology. The National Emergency Communications Working Group said last week that 000 calls from mobiles had long overtaken those from fixed landline services, but that Australian telcos were still a long way behind their international peers with respect to location-based services. Chairman of the working group, Mr. Dennis Luttrell, also said that the growing availability of internet telephony services was making matters worse, as calls to 000 from voice over IP services could only be traced to a service provider's point of presence. According to Australian IT, the working group has raised its concerns with the ACMA in a submission on the ACMA's review of the emergency call services determination, which is scheduled to be complete in December. Mr. Luttrell said that his group's position for the safety of the community was that any device capable of making an outbound call to the PSTN must be able and be required to carry an emergency call if such a product wants to be allowed to operate in Australia. Mr. Luttrell also said that while current telecommunications legislation acknowledged the need for 000 operators to trace distress calls, the ACMA was not holding telco operators to the obligation strongly enough. The ACMA declined to comment on the group's submission, saying that it is not appropriate for the ACMA to comment on individual submissions received, but added that, separately, the ACMA had launched a project into improving location information for calls made from mobile phones to the emergency call service. And a British hospital patient is so disgusted with the quality of his food that he's taken photos of the meals, posted them on a blog site, and asked people to guess what's being served. The blog site, entitled Notes from a Hospital Bed, is supposedly written by a freelance journalist enduring a lengthy hospital admission in the United Kingdom. His articles at hospitalnotes.blogspot.com include titles such as Should I Repair My Shoes With It or Eat It?, Hungarian Uprising, and Lunchtime Lotto, and feature photos of meals served by the hospital taken on his mobile telephone. According to The Age Tech, the gentleman's followers failed to correctly identify half of the 35 meals he posted on Hospital Food Bingo. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Bit of Twitter news floating around this week.
Mm.
Yeah, someone always have something slightly different on their system.
I'm quite looking forward to being able to actually see my playlists on my desktop again.
Well, what I need in our household, I'd like to have a device which can serve movies off a hard drive.
Twitter haven't said that they're going to do advertising. They've just left it in their terms of service.
It's sort of up there on par with PCs now, isn't it?
Motorola really haven't done all that well, have they?
Yes, yeah, so
I'll leave him alone. Emails, all right.
No Blu-ray for you.
You never get a .0 release, do you?
Not much on Windows 7, I must admit.
Yes, in some states I don't think the police have heard of computers.
But I thought you just kept your head down because there's lots of Apple things flying around in space during the course of the week.
Just before that, Dr. Ron was very rude to me.
They don't call them Blu-rays for broadcast, they call them XD cams.
So that's what he's been doing. He's been off with Anna Curran doing the Segway training.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb. Thanks for joining us on this otherwise action-packed Monday night. I think there's lots happening in this town. Welcome to Melbourne. If you didn't know, we've got a grand final happening, and there's some award thing on tonight, if you hadn't realised. But nonetheless, we're here. Dr. Ron is here. Good evening, Dr. Ron.
Good evening, Andrew. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no worries. And from right to left, or left to right, whichever way you might be watching, is JD's here in yellow this evening.
Good evening, everyone.
And the ever faithful, whoever always here with me, Graham Callaghan. Evening, Graham.
Evening, Andrew.
It's been an interesting week this week. Lots of splitting going on. Did you notice?
It's been a fascinating week, but I'm angry this week.
Oh, good. Hang on there, angry. We'll get to your angry in a minute.
Okay.
And, all sorts of other interesting things have been happening with Telstra and stuff like that. And I think just technology in general has just been revolutionised this week.
So I'm angry about Optus. We're going to have lots of rants
it's
tonight.
It's telco night tonight. I just feel it in the air.
There's a lot of anger in the room.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have to sort of suss it out.
I've been away for a while. I'm continuing my on again, off again pattern, which I've been maintaining for the last few weeks.
I know you've thrown a spanner in the works this evening. You're running the show in reverse order. You had the odd spot in the news. How did that work?
That was quite funny, wasn't it?
Wasn't it about the
poor man,
the hospital.
He's blogging his hospital food.
And the tech-related story was just because he was blogging it. And were people contributing back? Were they playing his game about whether he should tie his shoes with it or whatever?
No, they were whether he should fix his shoes with the food or eat it. No, they were just trying to guess what it was.
Oh.
And not many people were successful. Poor little man.
Oh, well, there you go.
But it's good to be back. Good show last week, Andrew. I listened on the
portable music player.
Yes, very entertaining.
I remember that. It was JG saved the day this week. He came in, was off the bench like the previous week. It was Adam Turner. And JD came in and they cancelled his course. So there we go. It was good. He came back in there. And I can hear myself on delay in the studio.
Sorry.
It's never a good thing.
Graham's pushing buttons and the ones over there. Anyway, I had been up the bush this week playing with Next-G. It works quite well in the bush these days. I decided we're in a very marginal area where I was. And I had one of those mobile routery things. You know the ones, the 3G mobile routers? Plugged my card, my little express card in the back of it, and stuck an antenna in there, as you do. One of the four-wheel drive-y type sort of antennas, a bit of gain for mobile stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I had full-scale broadband data, and lots of people standing around with me going, why can't I use my phone?
Were you sucking the life out of the local cell, were you?
Absolutely. I said, no. As Adam said, no Blu-ray for you. Yes. I said, no bandwidth for you.
No Next-G for you.
That's it. So, yeah, that was a pretty successful sort of little test that I managed to do during
so
the course
of the
week.
So it really is everywhere you need it.
Providing you've got a big enough stick.
Ah, yes.
You need to have something up in the air in certain places if you're down in a bit of a marginal area. And it makes all the difference between getting nothing or lots.
Mm.
So, anyway. Right, let's talk about this wonderful week that we've had in telco land. Telstra is obviously being given an option to consider their future. But before we get to that, Graham, You're angry, and I sense that this is a mobile phone related thing. The way you were shoving
mobile phone around angrily before.
What's got your goat, Graham?
Is this going to be good for radio?
I hope so.
Let me tell you a tale. 17:13 this afternoon.
It's 13 minutes past five.
Yep.
Yes.
I get beep, 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 beep text message.
Yeah.
From Big Pond.
Oh, yeah, they're the internet provider, the Telstra arm Big Pond people. Yes.
Telstra own Big Pond, don't they?
Yeah, at the moment.
That is just Telstra's internet service.
It is.
And the content of the message says this. You are currently subscribed to AirG Chat for 95 cents per day.
Oh, so you subscribed yourself to AirG Chat? Good.
When did you choose that?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. I haven't been anywhere near. I don't know what AirG Chat is. I don't know who provides it.
Are we going reverse here like in America? You've got to opt out everything. Everything gets subscribed for you.
I don't know.
So do tell. Have you rung them? What's going on? Have you worked it out from there?
It goes on. If you wish to discontinue your subscription, click options and unsubscribe from the chat room. And I'm thinking, well,
what chat room would you be in?
I wasn't in a chat room.
Yeah.
I had the phone in my pocket doing nothing. Sitting fixing somebody else's computer.
Did someone has entered your phone number into a web page somewhere and clicked subscribe.
Well, no idea, but even if they did, then it shouldn't be able to cost me 95 cents a day without me approving it somehow.
Without you replying back to that
short
text message or something, yeah.
Yeah.
So is it charging you right now, Graham?
Yes, it is.
Right now?
Yes, I rang Telstra on their normal number and spoke to... I can tell you who I spoke to.
Yeah, tell us.
Oh, here we go.
I spoke to Kristen.
Hello, Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Who's got a D and all lots of interesting numbers after a name. I probably shouldn't read those out on air.
No, you should.
Okay, that's Kristen D367054.
And you know who you are.
Yeah.
So what happened?
And she said, oh, well, there's not much we can do about that because that's been done by a completely different department and it's nothing to do with us.
But oh, good.
What department are you in? Mobile billing. And I said, well, you're mobile billing. You're the one who's billing me this money. You should be able to tell me why. And I said, oh, well, no, it's nothing to do with us. It's come from Big Pond.
Are you a Big Pond account subscriber?
Big Pond is
anyway?
Telstra, isn't it? Well, yes, I am. Because, well, I don't know whether I really am or whether I'm really not. I've never dealt with Big Pond. I've never spoken to anyone from Big
Pond. Think of the people who don't.
Well, that's right. I rang up that same number, the number I rang today to complain several months ago, and said, look, I'd like to have a data plan on my phone so I can browse the web from my mobile.
Mm.
And they said, yeah, sure, you can have a data plan and it'll charge you this much per month and we'll give you that many gigabytes. And it all was pretty happy about that.
Mm.
And, you know, I use it to do the odd yellow pages or white pages look up when I'm out and about. I use it to read Twitter if I'm stuck in a queue somewhere for five minutes.
I use it for maps.
I use it for the maps thing for the
got some news from Google Maps.
What's it called?
Too.
The Google Maps location thingy.
Latitude.
I use it for that, and most often I use it by plugging it into my computer and running a VPN through it to connect to my customers.
Private network through the broadband on your device.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, never ever do I use it for AirG Chat. I don't even know what AirG Chat is. I don't think I've ever chatted from my mobile phone. I do chat on other things, but never through my mobile
phone. Google,
everybody.
www.airg.com. It gives you a web page where you can select the country, enter a mobile phone number, and click a button that says "Hook me up."
Fantastic. Hook you up to who? That sounds like a song by an Australian band.
It doesn't even say what it is. It's a bit odd.
No.
But is it a Telstra-related thing?
Well, I still don't know. Kristen with that number told me yes, it was Big Pond. It was a company working with Big Pond. And what she said was, there's nothing at all we can do about it, but she gave me a 1-300 number to ring and said, you ring that number and you can unsubscribe from that. Now, I rang that number and a young lady answered the phone and said, MIA support. And I thought, well, that sounds right.
Missing in action.
Missing in action support, yeah. And she said... can I take down your phone number and details and someone will ring you back?
That's how all of this started, probably.
It turns out she was a paging service after some interrogation. And I wasn't prepared to give them my name and my address and my phone number and all of that sort of stuff because that would establish a relationship with them and possibly justify this sort of nonsense. So I said, well, no, I'm not prepared to do that. I'm just trying to talk to somebody about why this has happened.
I'll hold, thanks very much, knowing full well that she couldn't put you through to
anyone. Well, no, she couldn't, and that's why she eventually had to admit, no, she was from a paging service and not from the company itself. So all she could say was, well, look, if it's about this faulty product that you're ringing about, then I can tell you this number. Or if it's about this service that you want to unsubscribe from, then I can tell you this number. And it was something completely different.
I've just logged on, and it'd be interesting to see if anyone else who's obviously a customer of Telstra, or any other carrier for that matter, may have received an SMS. But I've just gone to airg.com, Graham, and it says select your country, the country that you're in, and then put your mobile number in, and then you'll get an SMS to sign up. So what say that someone just came here and did that?
Well, I don't know, but it wasn't me, so they shouldn't be able to charge me money, particularly at the rate of $30 a month.
Yeah, as long as you didn't click anything in that link, you should be okay, theoretically. But you then got an SMS saying that you signed up.
That I had signed up, and they were already charging me $1 per or 95 cents per day.
Okay.
And Kristen was kind enough to say, well, yes, I can see that charge on your account.
Oh, so they charged you.
They had charged it.
Sign-up had gone through despite the fact you hadn't authorised it.
That's right.
Oh, I can feel now a TIO the, rant coming on
now
here.
Now, the other thing that happened, of course, on the way there, and this is another point entirely, was I had you know that voice-activated creature that answers the phone at Telstra these days? And ask you what your number is, and are you ringing from this service, and what's the number of the service you're ringing about, and all that.
Yeah.
So I went through all that, and I told it the number, and it got it wrong, and I had to tell it the number a second time, and
he's bitter and
twisted. And it got it right again. And then I said, yes, you've got the number right. It put me through to the operator.
And then they asked you for your number again, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, and I said, no, that. I'm not telling you my number. Go and find it. It's in the system. But no, couldn't do that. That was all too hard for them as well. So I mean, They make things hard for themselves. They make sure that you're well and truly angry by the time you get to speak to a real person. You know, if not for what you rang about, for the stupid, you know,
I actually feel
hoops
for the
they make you jump through.
The poor telemarketer on the other end of the phone, because chances are they didn't ask for that. But yet the system, and it's not their fault.
But it's worth ranting at them about it, because if they get enough people ranting about it, they will complain upwards.
Maybe.
Because maybe. No one else can. No one else can.
It is bizarre that they will let something actually jump on the back of your mobile phone account without any form of validation or authorization from you.
No, she wanted my password and my date of birth and all sorts of stuff.
Your password
she would
for what?
Even for my mobile phone service for to.
Okay.
But I'm talking about the original AirG thing. It's amazing that Telstra will let a third party do that, just piggyback on
your
account.
Well, that's what I said, and they shouldn't do it.
No.
But looking at this web page,
to talk to me about my account, they demanded that I authenticate myself and prove that I am who I am, and yet they're going to charge me based on the say-so of some third party?
Of some completely anonymous, faceless IP address connecting to a web page and putting your mobile phone number in.
That's right.
It's bizarre.
It's absolutely bizarre.
All right,
they couldn't tell me whether it was Telstra or not.
Deirdre's left the TIO now, or she's leaving. She sent out her last press release the other day. There's somebody else coming in to replace the TIO, but I think it's worth following up, Graham. Are you going to give the TIO a call tomorrow?
Well, I might have to. We'll see what happens next, because I'm curious to see the rest of the story, because obviously I hung up, I rang the number she told me, got that response, which didn't satisfy me at all, and then rang back, and I got handed to Andrew, who said, oh, no, your phone's on the old system, I'll have to transfer you again. And I waited on 15 minutes again after that for someone else to pick up, and that was Margaret, whose number I've got here. And
so you've really spoken to all of them, haven't you?
Yep. This took me an hour and a half after I got the message.
And your battery goes flat by here. See, they've won.
Yeah.
They've got you in there, curled up in the fetal position on the floor going, my battery is flat, I can't take this anymore. Telstra, you win.
They certainly had me very confused and frustrated and annoyed.
You do have an option. It's called churn.
Yeah.
Yes, it's when you cancel your account and go somewhere else.
Absolutely. Yes. That's the last option.
Yes, so that might yet happen. But
we can see
I've
why
been
people
a customer
do.
Of Telstra for a very, very, very long time.
And they don't care, Graham. They couldn't
care
less about how long you've been a customer of theirs.
No.
They could not give two hoots.
It's quite clear that they don't give two hoots about anything at all.
No. Once upon a time, loyalty used to mean a great deal in this country, especially with mobile phones and telecommunication services. These days, they couldn't care less. You're a number. And, you know, if you leave, then you're one of 100,000 that leave, you know, that particular day, and another 100,000 will sign up and take your place. So they could not care less. I would be seriously looking at churning if they don't get this fixed. If they don't give like a $50 harassment and mental anguish reimbursement as well on your next bill.
Well, that won't happen.
Well, I'd be looking at going somewhere else.
Yeah, so
it's nuts. Absolutely nuts. Shouldn't
I agree. It's absolutely nuts. They need to pull their socks up on more than one front. A, they need that bloody machine at the front that asks you for your phone number and stuff to actually work and pass the number through to the operator. They need to stop these sorts of sign-ups. Telstra should be onto this, because it's come through with the from reading one of their trademarks, Big Pond. Now, Telstra should be absolutely furious if someone else is using that. And if it's not somebody else using that, then I'm absolutely furious that Telstra are behaving so unethically.
Well, Dr. Ron, let's talk about what Optus did during the course of the week. Speaking of behaving unethically...
Warlock says in the chat room to Graham, well, you could go to Optus.
Yeah, but he left the bois off the front of it. He just,
yeah, so let me talk about Optus. Just firstly, some other quick correspondence here. TD says, I know Dr. Ron's a believer in conspiracy theories. I think there might be a conspiracy against Tech Talk Radio. Have you noticed that whenever Senator Conroy makes a major announcement...
It's Tuesday.
He does it on a Monday or a Tuesday. Absolutely. So his announcement can't be put under the Tech Talk Radio microscope until the following week, by which time it's probably old news. Yep. A fine example of this week's announcement about the potential carve-up of Telstra, which happened on Tuesday. Not sure if this is a conspiracy or a carefully conspired plan to avoid quality Tech Talk scrutiny, says TD. That was very funny. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, well, he did it again today.
What's the funny side of that? I think he's spot on.
I left the office today and I got a barrage of Conroy press releases.
Yep.
He does them at 10 past, 20 past 5 on a Monday night, I'm sure.
He does it deliberately. Let me tell you about why you don't want to be churning to Optus. I could not believe this story.
I remember when I read it in the mainstream, I just said, you have got to be kidding. But do tell, Dr. Ron.
This is... subject of a bit of a ferocious court battle at the moment in the federal court.
Okay, so everything's allegedly.
It is all allegedly. It's between Optus and a number of other players, including Vodafone Hutchison Australia, VHA, and one of the smaller carriers operating here called Mediatel. What Mediatel have been doing, allegedly, is offering to forward calls via voice over IP service internationally. And they will advertise a number, which happens to be an Optus number, allegedly, so that Optus customers can call this Optus number, which is being used by Mediatel, and they can use their free minutes, or they can use their...
So it's like a Sydney number, or a Melbourne number, or a Brisbane number, or something like that.
They've or an Optus mobile number or something. So you can use your free minutes, or whatever it is on your plan, you can connect to that. They then forward the call internationally.
What a great idea.
I thought it was a good idea. Right. It's very enterprising, so good on your Mediatel. Optus have gotten wind of this and said, we're missing out on international tariffs. Let's just block that number in our numbering plan. So any Optus service can't ring this particular number because Optus are getting diddled out of money by actually connecting calls to it.
Can they legally do that?
Well, I don't know. The telecommunications industry ombudsman... Yes, there's a very high court in Australia about to make a decision to answer your question, Andrew. But the TIO has commenced an investigation. They've received a number of complaints about this decision by Optus. They've actually changed the clause in their terms of use for their mobile contracts. And the clause says that, let me just find it here, something along the lines of, we reserve the right not to connect calls to whatever phone number we choose or not to accept calls from any other network we choose on technical, operational or commercial grounds. And I thought, this just harks back to the bad, bad, bad old days where you couldn't call across carriers.
Remember when you couldn't SMS across from an Optus to Telstra?
You can't SMS from Optus to Telstra, or like in the United States, that like 10 or 15 years ago, they used to have this problem. You go to a payphone and you make a call and you get an operator, exactly. Yeah, and the AT&T operator would say, oh, hi, I see that you're trying to actually reach this number on this network. Just give us your Visa card number and we'll put the call through. And then you do that and they go ring, ring. Then the operator on the other carrier would answer and say, oh, you just noticed that you're trying to reach a number in our network. I'll just get your credit card number or your phone card number and we'll put you through. It's just absolute madness. We should be living in a country where we can pick up any telephone, dial any number, be connected to any number, and be billed. The people aren't trying to avoid paying for the call to be connected, but just that Optus they're not happy because they're missing out on international... I wish this wasn't a G-rated program all the time. They're missing out on international call tariffs. I think it's unbelievable. So grubby Optus are fighting this.
Maybe Optus could in the consider federal court. Doing a VoIP service.
No, same never.
Same
never.
As the customer. The other
well, client. Adam Turner went and checked out the VoIP on mobiles and obviously came to the conclusion that why would they ever give money away, which is the case. And there's only one way which you can actually truly use your mobile broadband to actually, make a VoIP call. So,
hack it. Yeah.
Well, Fring in our case when we did our tests and stuff like that. So, why would they do the same in the landline type environment?
Now, they're disputing interconnect fees. So, they're saying,
that's like banks... ganging up on credit card transaction fees.
They're saying we're not going to pay the interconnect fees now over to MediaTel and allegedly, and we're not going to do this, but you know, pay these fees for connections between these carriers for these reasons, and it's being fought out in court.
Good,
so
bring it on.
Australian IT had a very good article. I've blogged about it at www.drron.com.au if you want to have a look at the blog article about it. But Optus, what are you doing? This is just absolutely ridiculous. It's crazy behaviour, and I'd encourage people to vote with their feet.
Absolutely. Or tell your friends about it in particular, because that's where it comes down to. You know, people go and buy phones because of phones and services, and then, heaven forbid, if you want to break a contract, but if they want to alter it, then they've got carte blanche to do
exactly.
such a thing.
And MediaTel might not be the largest player in the Australian market. You might not use MediaTel, but if they get away with this and the decision is made in Optus's favour, then they will just take it as carte blanche to say, well, look, we can do this. This precedent's now been set. We can decide we're not going to connect to Telstra numbers between these dates and times for this reason or whatever.
Deirdre picked the wrong time to get out of the TIO, I reckon.
So just to clarify, they changed their terms and conditions to say...
To suit themselves.
We can choose not to connect your call to any number based on any reason we like.
Correct.
Well, why would you sign up with a phone company that says, oh, we're randomly not going to connect your calls?
Why would you sign up with a phone company that actually randomly subscribes you to things too?
That's right. I'm running out of phone carriers.
According to the article in the Australian IT News, the new term in the mobile contract says that Optus is allowed to block customers from calling any number for technical, operational or commercial reasons. An Optus spokeswoman said a very small number of customers had been dialing what looked like a standard Australian mobile number, and obviously was, to make an international call. Well, if there's someone on the end of that phone number that's got their own voice over IP gateway and is prepared to do that, then good luck.
Optus are just providing the end-to-end service, aren't they?
Well,
from originating to the termination.
They're
of
not
the call.
Happy with that because they're missing out on money.
They can't have it. Oh, anyway. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop in this evening, all talking about all things telco, and we've got plenty more coming up, unfortunately, so hopefully it's going to be one of those nights, I think. The Wacom tablet giveaway concludes very shortly. This is your last chance to get in one of your emails. I've seen a few of them, they're quite humorous, come in about why you'd want a Wacom tablet. And if you want to have a chance, just 30 words or less, I think was what Dr. Ron said. Come along to our website or send us an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au and tell us why. And you've got till the 25th, and we're going to draw this next Monday night on our 250th show.
We should have run this competition via Twitter, of course, to keep the length of the entries down.
Characters.
11 syllables. We'll make it a haiku.
Now, the Wacom...
There's an idea.
The haiku, JD. We haven't received any haikus.
I'm surprised.
Haiku, you're surprised, eh? Now, if you don't know what a Wacom bamboo tablet is, it's a...
And if you don't know what a haiku is, go to Wikipedia.
Go to Wikipedia. Well, they'll sort you out. It's a pointing device. Is that right, Andrew? You hold it like a pen.
It's pointing device. It looks like a biro that you would write on a piece of paper with.
And you write on what looks like a mouse pad sort of thing, but that mouse pad's connected via USB to your Mac or your PC or your notebook or your desktop computer. And that's your pointing device.
Yep.
And it's
and it comes with a few more other gadgets. Comes with a mouse as well for those people that just can't break away. You know, because it's just a thing. Yeah.
It's like a quit patch, is it? You've got your mouse just in case.
Just in case. It's a good way of putting it. You know, I grew up at school and, you know, I used pens and pencils and migrated on. And then this computer thingy came out called a mouse, which you couldn't write with or do anything like that. And then they brought the pen back along with a tablet. And let me tell you, they're fantastic. Did you know that they're actually touch sensitive? So if you're drawing on the screen and you push heavy, it comes out like, get the big texture and drag the big texture across, or if you just touch it lightly, it's nice and fine. It's like a pencil.
Fantastic.
And you can, it's all sorts of, and you turn it upside down and it's an eraser.
So that'd be handy in Photoshop if you wanted to trace lines.
Sensational in Photoshop.
Or quickly select areas or something.
Let me tell you, it's really good for editing too. I'd use it to cut television programs with it, and it's by far easier than using a mouse.
Now, Wacom's going to throw in a copy of Adobe Photoshop Elements and Corel Painter Essentials.
Oh, good.
For the cost of 5 minutes of your time and sending us an email,
amuse us.
You've got nothing
to
lose.
If you amuse us, you'll be good. Anyway, next week, 250th show. How about that? All right, let's talk about the big news this week, which happened last Tuesday, which was that Telstra was given an offer it can't refuse. Said, if you guys don't split your retail and your wholesale arm, then we're going to encourage you to do it. And you can think about it all you like, but at the end of the day, they didn't really get much of a... They're not seeming to get much choice. Now, this is just from the outside looking in, but one of the carrots that was dangled in front of them was the fact that they would not be allowed to participate in any auctions for Spectrum for the new 4G rollouts. Obviously, that's going to come along fairly shortly. I know Mark's rolling out 4G stuff in the States as we speak, so it's just around the corner. That's probably why Hutchison and Vodafone are merging, so they can get rid of the three brand.
That's not really a carrot. That's a man standing behind them with a big stick, isn't it?
It is.
Saying, you will do this or we're going to beat you.
It is. So there was the... said, if you don't do this, it's fine, but you won't be able to buy any new Spectrum. And then they touted about this splitting of Foxtel and stuff like that, and they'll be made to remove some of their ownership and that, which I think...
There was lots of messing around with that, wasn't it?
That's a bit unclear. I think Conroy did a backflip on that today too, but I haven't quite caught up with it because it's been a very busy day today.
Yeah, I get the impression from what I've read that the couple of different ministers had different impressions when they were being questioned by the media. So
yeah. Yeah. So Adam was going to say, can you explain the difference between a carrot and a stick to me? Carrot means encouragement. Stick means belt them over the head. Mm. That's what I thought anyway. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
We're there now. We're there.
See, I was just reading from it there and then. in brief, these regulations that have come out, I touched on it in the opening of the show this afternoon, but Telstra is going to be banned from future wireless spectrum options. Now, that's probably, that would really hurt, I could imagine, if they choose not to separate, or sell off its HFC cable network or its interest in Foxtel. Now, Telstra have announced just today, I believe, that they're actually going to bring out their own PVR. Video recorder. What for?
The T-Box.
As opposed to a TiVo, a T-Box.
The T-Box.
Oh, just to confuse the consumer, and hopefully they'll buy the wrong thing. Did you mean this? And
yeah, but you'll be going into your T-Life store, won't you, to be buying your T-Box?
Maybe.
Not if you're smart, you won't.
No, well, I haven't read up about that. We'll have a bit of a look at that further in the show. The ACCC is going to be given new powers to regulate the wholesale access to Telstra's network and hand out competition notices without prior consultation. So once again, the engine room is really what they're saying there, isn't it? They're basically going to say, well, we can control a bit of that. Obviously, they can give on-the-spot fines and things like that. I don't know whether they do. I think Adam made a point the other week about some of the on-the-spot fine levels are just like a flesh wound, for want of a better Monty Python term. You know, they don't hurt this carrier as much as, you know, what they would pay in a fine, they would earn 10 times in just a shorter period of time while we're on air or something like that. So the bottom line is that, is this necessary? I'm interested in what the panel has to say about this. So I think the breaking up of Telstra personally is going to make the playing field a lot more level. But is it not that now with the way the NBN is looking like rolling out?
Well, I was going to say, it's a bit of an interesting move that if Telstra do, well, it's unlikely that they will, but if they choose to carve up their broadband service and sell it off as a separate service or give it back to the government, whatever the arrangement's going to be, that's in fact duplicating the NBN process, I would have thought.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing with the NBN. Conroy's been given the results, but now he's holding them close to his chest.
He's probably waiting for Telstra to tell him what they're going to do next.
No, I think he's waiting for the grand final eve. This Friday, you watch.
Oh, Friday night, yes.
Friday night, you watch.
I think by not legislating the changes, they are prolonging the inevitable. I think somewhere down the track, these changes need to be legislated. It needs to be made law. And it's nice to... It'd be nice to hope that the Telstra would be able to do this voluntarily and to get it set up and working by themselves of their own volition and to the benefit of everybody. But it's never going to happen. It needs to be because we've got the situation that we're in now. We're in the situation we're in now for a particular reason. It's because it's not in Telstra's interests to be doing this.
Mm. No, that's right. Telstra's got a board and shareholders, so the board's actually obligated to make a decision or to recommend a decision that's going to be in the best interest of the shareholders, not the country.
Yes. Yeah.
So why start now? So to Telstra shareholders. Well,
this is right. So to achieve what should be achieved, it's going to have to be made law. I can't see that working any other way.
Should have been done back ages ago.
It should have been done 10 years
Telstra
ago.
Before Telstra was sold.
Absolutely.
Only sell the non-infrastructure part of Telstra. Mm.
But, well, yeah. I was listening to the ACCC chairman during the course of the week speak up about his past feelings, which he doesn't normally do. This is Graham Samuels.
Yes.
He was basically saying that what Conroy is doing now is undoing a lot of the poor management of previous governments, which dates back to when Telstra, or the then Telecom, became Telstra, and other governments just sort of basically lay down and let them get away with carte blanche.
Yeah, I think to a large degree you're probably right, and it's unfortunate that it has, because undoing it is a lot messier than not having made the mistakes in the first place. But you're absolutely right. It is correcting past mistakes, and of course the value of this asset of Telstra's, which was it was their draw card right up until quite recently when the NBN started being discussed. The ownership of those cables and pipes and ducts and all that infrastructure was Telstra's big ace up the sleeve. It was what they had to hold over everybody else. You know, we own this, and you have to pay us to use it. But
that was probably the one unforeseen thing, because, I mean, you know, Optus originally tried to use that and then had to go above ground.
Yeah.
And then struck all sort of regulation issues with above ground cabling.
That's right, when they rolled out their pay TV network.
Especially with some councils.
The black cables running down the streets, yeah.
I think Boroondara, which is one of our broadcast areas at the moment, said, no, you can't run these black cables in the streets. So whole suburbs, municipalities were disadvantaged, if that's the word, probably advantaged now, because of the government. The local government said, no, you can't run these big ice or black cables
and
through the sky.
And in other areas, Telstra went and ran cables underground at the same time as Optus were running the equivalent cable overhead and duplicating infrastructure. Now, your point a bit earlier, Justin, about whether splitting Telstra and acquiring some of this infrastructure is a duplication, I don't think so. It's not a duplication, because if this infrastructure can be transferred to the NBN or acquired by the NBN or acquired by the government or something like that, this I'm talking not about...
This is the NBN background.
This is the backbone, and it's not the copper wires that we're talking about, but it's the trenches and the pits and the ducts and the pipes that all runs through underground.
That's exactly right.
If that can all be acquired back, either to the government directly or to the NBN as a government agency, then we've undone a serious hurt that was done to Australia when that was sold off.
Some analysts are reporting at the moment that the NBN company will be the winner from any potential split that the telco is going to undertake.
Well, the NBN company, of course, is currently, it's a wholly owned Australian government.
It will be maintained, from what I last heard, will be maintained government-owned, or government-controlled.
So if the NBN...
Not government-owned.
If the NBN organisation is the winner, then Australian citizens are the winners.
Yeah, but don't forget, we've had the knee-jerk reaction now. There's the big Tuesday drop the bombshell. Oh, my goodness, Telstra's going to be split. But now everyone's had a little bit of time to think about it, and particularly a lot of communications analysts are actually now sort of saying that, well, potentially if Telstra do this right, this will all work out in their favour and in the favour of some shareholders. And it's
of course, because the value of this infrastructure is dropping by the second as the NBN gets closer.
But it's also the catalyst that Telstra is needing to change. Because
absolutely,
look at the its old regime, its old, antagonistic, defying, regime, which said, no, we're not going to do any of this. And now the government's basically said, well, here's a catalyst to make you guys stop and think and form the new Telstra, which is going to take us forward into the future. And, Minister Conroy's objective to gain access to the Telstra assets for the National Broadband Network is really what he wants. That's what Conroy wants.
Absolutely.
And it's what you've been talking about. But, and as a result, Telstra could turn that into a positive.
And
really,
they should.
Couldn't they?
And they've got plenty of other examples to look at overseas to see where it's been done right and where it's been done badly. You've only got to look at, Telecom New Zealand, even not long ago, were going through this process. And still are they? Is it?
Well, I'm not sure what's happening in New Zealand. Maybe someone Magic up there in Magic FM in the North Island. They might know. Come along and tell us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Anyway, this trap has been set such that Telstra CEO David Thodey's best option is to play along and agree to the role the carrier's network assets into the building of the NBN. But just as the government wins from a particularly, from a quick and cheaper build of the NBN because the infrastructure's already there, Telstra might also win by gaining a return on its aging assets, reducing the burden of regulation and allowing it to focus on higher margin revenue businesses such as NextG and the black cable that goes under the streets.
Absolutely.
Well, that's right. If they relinquish control of the infrastructure, then someone's got to maintain it, and that'll be the government now.
Yeah.
Which is where it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
When the Postmaster General plugged all those bits of copper that went underneath the street. You can still see them, PMG.
The Postmaster General's Department and later on Telecom Australia.
Wasn't that a wonderful
spent
time?
Decades building up a phenomenally good infrastructure in this country of telecommunications cabling.
Which Telecom was doing up until about 1993 or 1994.
And was maintaining beautifully, so beautifully, that the technology that was designed to carry voice back in the 1930s or 40s or whenever it all started can now carry, you know, 20 odd gigabits per second, you know, RF for our ADSL services. That's how well it was built back in the old days, and Telstra letting it crumble into nothing. Perhaps this will, you know, redress some of that.
Who knows? All right, we've spent nearly half a show talking about this, and it'll obviously be fairly important technological stuff happening in the next few weeks as these decisions unfold, and even when Mr. Conroy decides to release the results of his filtering trial, which the longer he leaves it, the more uglier it's going to get, isn't it? Or is he just timing it beautifully for a press release on Friday at 5 o'clock before the grand final?
Wouldn't be surprised. He's dug himself a great big hole. He's got to get out of with that. So yeah.
All right, let's talk about Google just briefly before we go to the break. Google. Have you turned on your Google Maps of recent times? Traffic.
How good's that?
It is very, very good. Now, I don't know how they do it. Does anyone here know how they do it? Because it's you get little green and yellow and red lines drawn over the top of your Google Maps indicating whether she's good, bad,
traffic
or ugly.
Traffic density.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, it's only been on for about the last week or so, and I've been trialing it whilst driving around, and it seems pretty good. Now, I don't know where they're getting their data from.
Well, there are commercial companies that track these things and sell the data. You can subscribe to them as another company.
But how do they know what's on the corner of this street and that street? Like, that's fairly obscure, and we've got a fairly big traffic network in a lot of our cities.
I think the companies that provide the data have test vehicles out with GPSs and returning data about how long they're taking to drive places.
Oh, okay.
I think that's that's one way it's done anyway.
Graham, you subscribe to a traffic... Well, I don't know if you subscribe or not, but you've got a traffic service.
He subscribes to a lot of things, whether he wants to or not.
Whether you want to or not, you subscribe to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm subscribed to. Thanks, Telstra. Yeah.
There is a service in your GPS, in your car.
That's right,
which tells you traffic. Is this obviously, there must be a similar source of the data.
They're having a street party.
I would assume so. What's happened there is that I've bought a product from TomTom.
Yep.
And they've provided me with a add-on for that, which receives traffic off a subcarrier on the FM radio.
Has your TomTom got an FM radio receiver built into it?
No, it's got a little one that plugs in the USB in the bottom.
Righto, okay.
So it plugs into the TomTom. It's got a little receiver box about the size of your little finger.
Yep.
And it's got a big long antenna that you clip onto the windscreen.
Righto, yep.
And it receives the traffic information from that and can plot you a path around the traffic.
I wonder if Google are using the same source.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, that they buy that traffic data, or they receive that traffic data from a service that TomTom subscribed to, and they pay a license fee for selling the devices like I use.
Do you know much about who actually provides the data, or who provides that service?
I haven't researched it.
I don't know anything about it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure which radio station it is, but it's attached to one of the radio station transmissions.
Oh, okay. Well, I know my phone doesn't work on that, so obviously Google are getting it from somewhere to overlay it over the top of that, which comes down the mobile broadband.
I know that the TomTom service only works in a very small number of cities in Australia,
okay,
but that it's probably growing.
I think the Google's working in most major cities around the country too, which is really good. I saw, just as a by before we go to the break, a mobile no right-hand turn camera today. Well, there's some major innovations going on around
mobile. No right hand turn.
Exactly. There's a no right hand turn spot very close to us here at the studio, and because they're digging a tunnel under a railway bridge just down the road from me.
I know the one you mean.
And I looked over and I saw this big red box, and I thought it was one of those lighting gantries, you know, that sit there.
It's a CCTV camera.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's used for monitoring traffic flow, but I think it's Vic Roads, our roads authority here, to monitor the traffic flow remotely with that camera.
Oh, is that what it was?
Can they issue infringement notices from that?
No. It's just management for looking at traffic lights.
Oh, okay. Because I thought there's no right-hand turn and they're witched hats, put those red things.
Witch's hats.
Witch's hats.
Traffic cones.
Yeah.
Traffic cones.
Put the traffic American stuff.
Yes.
So you couldn't turn right, but I reckon a lot of people go, why can't I turn right? And I'm going to turn right. And I reckon that camera was there just to sort of capture the glorious moment and send them we've got a picture of you turning right. Well, you shouldn't have. But anyway.
No. It's nothing. Nothing that's anything that's
nothing sinister.
No. It's just to monitor the traffic management from afar, from a control room.
Fantastic. Mm. I love this new technology. Isn't it great? We're going to take a break when we come back with Adam Turner's view from the couch. He'll have his 2 cents worth or $3 worth on the split from Telstra. So,
good.
It will continue.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This
just
is
the one that occupies
this
the room.
This is Gadget of the Year, this one.
I just want to click an Xy and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Androids.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines? Yeah, go on.
I'll tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet Villain of the Year.
And the moral of the story is backup.
Backups, for goodness sake.
This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to show 249. Doesn't time fly? Yes, seems like only yesterday we started this little.
Have we got
shindig?
Episode 250 coming up, do we?
Really? Yeah.
That's a milestone, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Hey, I've got a hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Possibly one of our youngest listeners. And she tunes in religiously every week. She pesters her dad to put the program on in the car, on the radio. Hello to Kayla. Now, Kayla is 12 years old.
G'day, Kayla.
She drives all over the countryside, and she says, Dad, put the TikTok guys on the radio for us. We need to listen. So it's great that you're tuning in, Kayla, and thank you for your support. It's wonderful to have you on board listening to the program.
You've told some interesting stories in your time about people that you've listened to this program. I think it was people that drive around and they just have to work and sometimes they're forced to tune in to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There's nothing else on the radio worth listening to.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, well, g'day, Kayla. Welcome aboard and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, hope you're enjoying the show.
Say hi to Dad as well.
Now, obviously, let's... Well, Adam's got an opinion on a lot of things and why would he be no different when it comes to Telstra and all that sort of stuff? So, you know, we'll hear a little bit more about the Apple sort of sojourns coming up shortly. I know Brian in the office was going to come in this evening and tell us about what happened to his iPhone. But
He didn't upgrade to 3.1, did he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
Is it? Well, what happens? Well, obviously, nothing happens.
All sorts of things you expect to work break.
Yeah? Hmm. And? Did it, and it all broke. Because I know that...
Oh, I haven't done mine yet. I'm waiting for the fixes to come out.
I saw his phone at work. He kept smashing it on the table and then using language that I can't use on a G-rated radio program. But in a lot of respects, he was cursing and swearing and carrying on, saying, why did I ever do this? Because it can't even...
You can't roll back.
The calls drop out. You know, it's really slow and sluggish and all that sort of stuff. So what's the warning, JD? Don't go to what? Version 3?
3.1. Hold off.
And you can't roll back.
Well, the baseband gets upgraded, so you can't roll it back.
Oh, okay. So you just have to wait until 3.2 comes out or something. Or
well,
a bug
something
fix
better,
something.
Yes.
Oh, well, there you go, people. Just don't do that just yet. Anyway, here's Adam's view from the couch this week and his opinion on what is going to happen with the Telstra thingy. Start.
Stephen Conroy has taken on the might of Telstra with the old adage, divide and conquer. Voluntarily separate or we'll do it for you. That's the blunt message to Telstra from a man determined to simultaneously save and destroy the Australian internet. The biggest telecommunications shake-up in a decade, along with the NBN announcement, Conroy's proposed legislation encourages Telstra to voluntarily divest its copper network rather than be forced into functional separation. There's even a threat to ban Telstra from licensing future wireless spectrum, something that's bound to get the telco's attention as it turns its eye to 4G networks. If the communications minister's spin doctors are working on a hard man Conroy the Barbarian persona, they're going about it the right way. They even followed up the separation announcement by laying the boots into opposition communications spokesman Liberal Senator Nick Minchin. Conroy's mid-afternoon press release noted that Minchin had reached a career milestone with the issue of his 150th portfolio media release without establishing a single policy. It's funny how Conroy's office manages to get so many press releases out the door before 5 to 5 when there's someone else's blood in the water. Conroy's spin doctors might have been tempted to add that the Liberals did little more than kowtow to Telstra's bully boy tactics during their time in office. Of course, that would make it harder to overlook the fact that Conroy's hardline tactics are required to clean up the mess his own party created when they lacked the cojones to separate Telstra in the first place. Meanwhile, Sol is laughing all the way to the bank with our money in his pockets. His replacement, David Thodey, diplomatically says Telstra remains committed to working with the government to find a solution that is in the best interests of the industry, the nation, Telstra and our shareholders. It's a shame Telstra's propaganda site Now We Are Talking has been silenced. I imagine the response from the three amigos to Conroy's separation announcement would have ended with, "And the horse you rode in on!" Sol Trujillo's crowning achievements at Telstra now consist of A. building the next G network, B. ensuring Telstra was blocked from controlling the national broadband network, and C. ensuring Telstra will be split in half. Not exactly a shining example of shareholder value. Right now, Conroy looks like the champion of Australian internet users. Until you remember this is the same guy who's determined to cripple Australia's internet with ineffective filters that will be open to political abuse. Minchin had his fun a few weeks ago, once again labelling Conroy's filtering trials a farce and calling for the entire system to be scrapped. It's a view shared by most people these days. Even if you support filtering, you have to admit the government's handling of the trials has been a joke. The results are months overdue and Conroy refuses to reveal how he'll decide if the trials were a success. Of course, Conroy the head kicker has a comeback for all occasions. Stop asking questions. If you don't support filtering, you must be a pedophile. Nothing like a constructive approach to such important debates. So where does that leave us? Some pundits think Conroy is bluffing with the Telstra negotiations. Others hope he's bluffing over internet filtering. Anyone who knows anything about technology is telling Conroy that mandatory filtering is a stupid idea. It's the equivalent of putting speed humps on the freeway to reduce the road toll. A noble idea displaying a complete lack of understanding of traffic management. Hopefully Conroy is just going through the motions so he can tell supporters of filtering that he tried his best but it just won't work. If that's Conroy's master plan, he's taking a hell of a long time to put it into action. If that's not his plan, he's in for the mother of all fights. The stakes are pretty high when you're gambling with the future of Australia's digital economy. The question yet to be answered is whether history will remember Stephen Conroy as a sinner or a saint.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Or the Messiah, maybe. Maybe he's just a naughty boy, as they say in the classics. Thank you, Adam. That was Adam Turner's view from The Couch. You can catch that on a podcast near you. You can subscribe to his feed off the Tech Talk Radio website. And
so don't have to listen to us ramble on if you want Adam.
Just get Adam if you feel the urge to make a cup of tea or do whatever you need to do and have him in your ears for, you know, 3 to 6 minutes every day.
Kind of a weekly 3-minute Adam installment.
Yeah, well, actually, I listen to him on my phone because I mix it all up and then I check it back on the telephone to make sure it sounds good. So, it's all good. So, there you go. All right, that was Adam's view on potentially the Conroy issues that are going to happen. But it's all going to unfold between now and the MCG Grand Final next weekend. So,
speaking about iPhone problems before.
Oh, yes.
I started iTunes on my computer for the first time in a few weeks the other week.
Woohoo.
I'm running iTunes 9.
It asked you to upgrade and you did.
Well,
a bit like Graham getting subscribed.
It must have and I must have.
Now you'll have all sorts of funny things in your control panel.
Well, I recall listening to an episode of Tech Talk when I wasn't here with, warning, do not do this. Wait until it's not a 0.0 release anymore. But it seems to be okay. I'm not using it in conjunction with a music player. I'm not using it with an iPhone or an iPod. All I'm doing is using it as a catalogue system. And it seemed to be all right.
Good.
Haven't had any major problems yet.
Excellent. I'm still waiting.
For the
something.
for something other than the .0, is that what you're waiting for?
Well, the forums and support sites aren't full of people complaining, are they?
There's a couple.
There's a couple, are there?
Yeah, on the Apple side, there's a couple.
I loaded it up the other day.
There's always a couple.
I'm with Adam. I can't understand why you have to have all these different usernames and passwords just to share music and stuff like that. Like, fair enough, validating or authorizing your machine, but yeah, you've got the share. Oh, it's all too complex. How are the simple, you know, people who aren't tech savvy supposed to work out this new technology when you need to put in a password here, there, and everywhere? Anyway, all right. What else has been happening this week, boys? Did you know that Microsoft are going to give a student version of Windows 7?
It's going to be pretty cheap too.
30, yeah. $30, hey.
I wonder if students could afford that.
I wonder if it's, you know, cut down a bit, you know, no aero because they can't afford the big, you know, swanky screen, so there'll be none of the desktop-y sort of stuff.
No spell check because students don't spell check stuff anyway.
That's right. Probably a few other, you know, hidden features. That's what they call bugs.
They might have to do a special version of the spell check that turns all the E's into threes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Elite speak dictionary.
Yeah.
Cool.
Can we speculate too, Dr. Ryan? Cause, and, you know, conspiracy theory stuff?
Yeah, we should.
I reckon that $30 is US, by the way. Because Apple are doing a cheapie on their upgrade, do you reckon this is why Microsoft's doing a cheapie on their upgrade?
Now, did you know the truth about the upgrade?
Well, wasn't there a vicious rumour that...
You can't handle the truth. Sorry.
For $30, you could actually...
upgrade from pretty much anything.
Upgrade from an old version?
Yes, you can.
And they knew about it?
Oh, well, they only made one press, I suspect.
Yeah.
There's only one upgrade.
Yeah.
But yes, you can actually use the upgrade on any version of OS X.
But it's a cheap upgrade, isn't it?
It's a very cheap upgrade.
And do you think Microsoft are doing the same thing here to fight fire with fire?
Well, if this is just for students, I mean, yeah, you know, people interpret the student license fairly liberally, I think, from time to time, but...
Well, they've got till October the 22nd to make their mind up, haven't they? They might change their mind between now and then.
Microsoft know the value of having students use their product. If you've gone to school and learned how to do everything on a computer, on a machine running Windows 7 and Office 2007, then guess what you're going to want to use when you land in a business role and you need a computer?
Yeah, you can say the same about all sorts of things.
Google
like
apps. Yeah.
Like editing as well. If you edit on Final Cut, why don't you want to go in the industry of Final Cut?
Mm.
Yeah.
So, but
makes sense.
Yeah, and Microsoft know the value of this, so and this is why they've always had a bit of a program of student licenses. The Office Home and Student Edition has been promoted fairly well.
Yeah, it has, so, and you can always get a relatively cheap a student pack or something for about $200, and it just gives you the four Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and
yeah, and it gives
Outlook
you three licenses, so you can install it on Dad's computer and your notebook and your sister's computer or whatever. So
yeah, Mum and Dad get an added bonus that they get a student discount on whatever. So yeah, no, I think it's good. OS X has released top sales forecasts. The new Apple Snow Leopard apparently is doing better than anyone expected, despite the fact that some CDs don't play when you get them out of the box. I wonder if Adam was the only one who got
sales,
that.
You have to
no, there's
more.
Quite a few had that problem.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, good. Research firm NPD Group said that early stages of the sales were ahead of its two predecessors, OS X Leopard and Tiger. And according to the company, Snow Leopard is selling at roughly twice the speed of Leopard and four times that of Tiger. Do you reckon that's because you can upgrade from anything? And everyone's taken the opportunity to say, oh, I can come through to the latest OS.
You can upgrade from anything. It's a cheap upgrade. But I think more importantly, the difference between Tiger and Leopard was so significant that people put off upgrading for a long time because they wanted their previous applications to work. Now, that's not to say that upgrading from Leopard to Snow Leopard isn't without its faults. There are issues and there's applications that you won't be able to use after the upgrade.
Yeah, anything that was about PC wasn't.
Yeah, but it's less significant of an upgrade. So I think people are jumping on it fairly quickly because they can see the benefit of using an Intel-only application or platform. So I think that's perhaps part of the issue, and the cheap upgrade doesn't hurt.
Well, very good. So there you go. There's another reason to tinker with the Leopard. I know that some people have complained, in particular Brian in the office. I have invited him to come in and explain his woes, but there were some other issues that he came up with which were quite surprising, and I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. But anyway, I won't steal his thunder. He can come in and... Have you loaded it up yet, JD, at home?
No.
Okay. See, this is the thing, isn't it? You have to load it up, and then once you load it up, you probably can't roll that one back either, can you?
Probably not easily, no.
No, I wouldn't have thought. You'd have to go back and rebuild from scratch or something like that if you wanted to do that. So, all right, Tech Talk Radio, Andrew, Dr. Ron, Graham, and Justin in this evening. There seems to be a bit of a spike at the moment in malicious sites, malware and stuff like that. Now, WebSense has come out and said that they're going to see a 600% rise in malicious code put on sites. This is the baddies trying to get your details and steal your privacy and stuff like that. The growing threat to businesses from the web was put into focus, really, with a whopping 671% rise in the number of malicious sites reported during the year. Now, a lot of those sites are trusted sites which have been hacked, and you find a little bit of snippety code. And, of course, it's really hard to detect unless you're running latest up-to-date antivirus, anti-spyware, anti-this, anti-that sort of software on your computer, isn't it, Graham?
Yeah, that's right. It's...
Does this bother any of your clients? Because you...
Frequently. Because, yeah, as you say, you get a site that gets hacked or you get an advertising... provider that gets fooled into providing malicious code as part of an ad that gets put on a web page.
Mm.
And, you can be on what you think is quite a legitimate site or follow what appears to be a legitimate link and end up with... garbage on your computer.
Yeah, as a web developer, we have a client who is a fairly prominent legal person in town, a legal company. they defend people, and mm-hmm. their site was basically the victim of one of these little hacking things. You come to the website and you would not notice anything different unless you're running a later state-of-the-art sort of antivirus thing. And then the real telltale sign was that when you search for them, Google came up and said, this may harm your computer going to this site.
Yes.
And you go, oh, there's a telltale sign.
Yeah, that's
sign.
A big problem. And yeah, you really want to hope that your antivirus or whatever protection you've got on your machine is up to the challenge. But that's always a problem because there's always a lag.
Mm.
I mean, the stuff has to be out there in the wild before the antivirus...
Well, that's true.
...software can start detecting it.
But in the proactive world of internet development, for want of a better term, the number of sites that I go to, because we develop websites and put a lot of things on people's web pages, come on, guys, some serious thought needs to go into some passwords. A lot of them are just so... one of those, what do they call them? The forced attack, where they just hammer different passwords.
Just a brute force attack.
That's the word I'm looking for. Those brute force attacks, my goodness, if they don't get them in the first 100 tries, I'll go, hey. So I just think that a lot of, to prevent these sites being hacked from, credible sites, it could be any site, really, couldn't it? As long as they've got a decent password to stop people getting into their websites or one particular person on that shared site, then you've got half a chance, so...
And it's so hard to convince ordinary users to set a strong password. It's not hard to set a strong password, but people just resist and resist and resist. And, it's just very hard to get some people to set a strong password on their accounts, and they don't understand that this is what the end result is.
Even my 7-year-old has a strong password now.
And they say, oh, but it doesn't matter if somebody can read my email. I don't need a strong password. There's nothing in there. I don't care if somebody gets in.
But it's what you can do with it, of course.
That's exactly right. Mm. And, you've got to stop thinking that way, people. This is the end result, is all this spam and malware that's out there.
Well, I was dealing with a fairly major provider of foodstuffs in this country the other day. They have a lot of shelf space in the Safeways and the Coles of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And their password to get into their site was a month and a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not much thought. I reckon that was the time they registered their site too, just quietly. So, it's not really... and that's the sort of thing you go, oh my goodness. I've even come across sites that have the password let me in.
Yep.
And you're sort of, goodness me, guys.
Or password is the password. Yeah. Or the password is the same as the username and the username is admin.
But I reckon this is the problem behind why we're getting a lot of malware, because people are just being... The crooks are just... Mm. Just taking advantage of people's lack of ability to set a reasonable password on a website, for example.
And step one of getting into a website can be just hacking an ordinary user's account that has just got your insignificant emails in. That can often be step one of getting in. So, it's just... Okay, a good password. Does everybody in here know what a good password is?
Like admin and admin?
Yeah, no.
No, sorry.
Oh, that's on my router.
How do you... Andrew.
It's in a lot of routers.
Well, Graham, you teaching me just to close your eyes and type randomly at one point.
I've been known to set passwords that way. Yeah. I don't have trouble remembering those passwords if I use them all the time.
If you need a key that you don't have to remember, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
A good password has got upper and lower case. It's got numbers in it. It doesn't mean anything when you look at it, and it's not pronounceable.
Yep.
But maybe each of the letters stands for another word in a phrase that you know that you
can
remember
easily.
That's
a really good way to do it. The way I say it is you have three out of the following four types of characters in it. You have the four types being uppercase, lowercase, numerals, and punctuation.
Yep.
If you've got three of those four types in it, doesn't matter which three, you could have uppercase, lowercase, and punctuation, or you could have uppercase, lowercase, and numerals, or you could have all lowercase and punctuation and numerals. So, punctuation is a comma or an exclamation mark or something. The way to create a randomish one is to don't use an obvious thing like don't use biographical information
like St Kilda 2009.
Don't use name of pets. Anything that people generally know about you, that's football team you support.
Yep.
Nothing to do with your name or your company's name or the name of the domain or the name of the anything like that.
Yeah, the street you live in, anything like that.
None of that. Nothing that's mentioned anywhere on your Facebook page, basically.
It's good I don't have a Facebook page. I'm safe.
You use something like a family saying or a family in joke,
But that's a name.
And you use a whole phrase. And then what you do is you take the first letter of each word, and if the word 2 occurs in it, you turn that into the digit 2, or if there's numbers in it, you use the numbers. You use the punctuation from the phrase, and yeah, you've got an instant password that's instantly rememberable. You can remember it.
Memorable, yes. Yep.
It's not a dictionary word, which means if people are using programs to try and brute force their way through the password prompt and they're trying words out of a dictionary, that's just not going to work.
When we say a dictionary, we mean any word list, so yeah.
Mm. Warlock on our chat has come up with a, if you can't think of one, go to this site, which is https://grc.com/passwords.htm. I suspect it'll generate one for you, and you go, oh, I like the looks of that one. Then you can remember it, write it down in your invisible notebook, which you keep in your invisible desk. Isn't that what you do, Graham?
Yep, and the other thing is, don't use the save password function on your computer. Don't have it save your password so that...
in your web browser?
In your web browser, so it logs you in all the time.
That's a great way of forgetting.
That's a good... Yeah, because you'll come to it 6 months later and you'll say... And I know I've had customers say this to me. Oh, there isn't a password on my email. You just click on here and it opens straight up. Yeah. There's no password on it. What's the password? So, yeah, there is a password there. You typed it in once and saved it and never typed it
again. 3.5 years ago.
You forgot it, yeah. So, yeah, don't use the save password function. That forces you to type it every time, and that means that when you need it, you'll remember it.
I was very proud of my mum today. She got a phishing email.
Yeah, it's your mum. I haven't seen your mum for ages.
She's going well. Now, she's
still actively surfing the net, obviously, by the sounds of it.
She is. She's buying and selling things on eBay, and she uses PayPal. And she got an email which purported to be from PayPal, asking her to click on a link to verify her account details. And she had recently had an issue with PayPal, and she'd been talking to them over the phone about something completely unrelated. And she thought, well, this is probably to do with that. And she looked, and I think the sender had from paypal.com, but in the to field at the top of the email, it was blank. And she thought that was a bit odd. And she thought she'd better ask me before she clicked on anything. And I said, oh, I'm glad you asked me. You've done very well. Have a look here through the text. I think everything was spelt correctly, because often a telltale sign of getting phishing emails is that there's spelling mistakes or punctuation errors or grammatical errors, because a lot of the people that are targeting Australians or English-speaking
English
countries...
English is not their first language.
English is not their first language, and they do make mistakes. This was a very, very, very good email. It looked very much like an email from PayPal. But there are a couple of spots where there wasn't a space between the full stop and the letter of the next sentence. And I thought, well, once maybe, but twice, no, there's something wrong with the formatting there. That's not correct. And then I said to Mum, look, I'll show you a trick. And she's using Outlook Express as an email program. And you move your mouse pointer over the link that it was asking you to click, and it said that this was going to take you to paypal.com/something-or-other. And at the bottom of the email window, it actually had the link that it was going to take you to if you clicked it. And it had www.paypal.com. Blah, 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 like ZXQQQ, something or other, completely random, .something else.org, / something else on a different port number. And I said, you can see that if you move your mouse pointer over that, that doesn't look like that. That starts out, looks like a PayPal address, but then there's stuff after the .com of the paypal.com, and it looks completely odd and out of place, and it's not going to take you to where you think you're going. I said, furthermore, let's forward this back to PayPal and let them know, because PayPal have an address. I think it's called
Spoof.
Thank you, JD, @paypal.com. You can forward these sorts of emails on so they can investigate it. We tried that. The Optus mail server stopped us from sending the email because the Optus
mail
server...
So not only they're blocking phone numbers, they're blocking email addresses now.
Well, no, good on Optus for blocking
spam. And the reason that was returned from the server was your email contains this string, and it was the domain name that was contained in those links.
Maybe that's where their terms of service have come from recently. They've adapted their broadband terms of service.
Oh, I don't know what they've done. But
Mrs. Dr.
Ron. She did well there in identifying that it was a spam email. I said, what should we do? I said, well, there's one thing you can do is just delete it. That's all you have to do.
Yep.
Empty your deleted items. Don't worry about it ever again. So
that is one thing that eBay and now PayPal, which is a subsidiary of eBay, have done from the very beginning, back in whatever that was, 1994, I think I signed up with them. They've had a spoof email address that you can send any issues back, and they'll investigate them and block them. And
they're having a big money laundering thing at the moment too, by the way. Apparently the government's got into them about people are finding it very easy to launder money through it. We had to all jump through hurdles and hoops and all.
Well, not PayPal, recently. Presumably, but unscrupulous users of the PayPal service.
No. This is, we had to. It's like doing 100 points on PayPal. Oh, it was huge.
Oh, to open an account?
No, to continue to use your account.
Oh, really?
So there you go. Maybe watch this space and see what happens. All right, Tech Talk Radio, back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
It'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government. Yeah.
I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
And don't forget, if you want a last chance to win a Wacom bamboo tablety thing, visit our website, techtalkradio.com.
It's not actually made of bamboo, is it?
No, it's just called bamboo.
Oh, okay.
It's just a nice name for it, really.
You thought it was environmentally friendly.
I thought
didn't
it
you?
Was a environmentally friendly tablet made of bamboo.
During the break,
next passing panda would eat it. That would be bad.
During the break, we were watching someone whose prosthetic finger was altered to a USB stick. Maybe they could alter it to a bamboo. See, it's got a thought, isn't it?
Bamboo style is built into your finger.
That's the one.
That's a good idea.
You use your fingernail instead or something like that. Mm. Yeah. Here's some interesting news. The Skype founder sue eBay. Apparently, was this a big surprise for anybody? Skype co-founder Niklas Zennström and Janus Friis, if that's how you say his last name, have sued eBay, the company that acquired their internet telephony startup and turned them into billionaires. The lawsuit was filed by their company Jolted, which controls the core technology that powers Skype in the U.S. District Court of Northern California. Now, JD, you're across this. What's going on?
There's something weird going on here because, as you've alluded to, they sold Skype
$2.75 billion. They sold
to eBay, but they didn't sell some of the core technology that allows it to work. Apparently,
was this in the contract, or did they just sorry, forgot that?
Apparently, it was in the contract, and it's a bit.
So someone didn't read the fine print.
Yeah. So what the Skype founders are claiming is that every time that the actual Skype client that's currently there with their version of the technology is downloaded, it's impinging on their intellectual property and using their product illegally. So in the meantime, the Skype company that's now part of eBay has been developing their own core technologies to replace the old Skype core technology. Anyway, it's all very messy, and it's a bit weird why they actually sold only part of the product and not the whole product. So I'm not sure what they were intending to do when they actually did the sale. It's a bit strange.
Yeah, well, I wonder what their motives were, their underlying motives behind doing all that sort of stuff too, because you would think if you were selling a product, surely you would sell the whole product.
The whole product
you
would that get worked.
The whole kit and caboodle which comes with it and stuff like that as well. So, do you use much Skype? Does anyone use Skype these days?
I don't use Skype, no.
Is Skype one of those flash-in-the-pan things that, hey, a good idea at the time, but I think we've all got it loaded, but who really uses it these days?
In the little bit of reading I did about this whole legal issue, apparently since eBay has taken over Skype, their sales have gone up 44%.
What, eBay sales
or Skype sales? So it's actually increased under eBay's management, if you like, and I'm not quite sure what the reason for that is.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's others that could tell us. So it is increasing in popularity. I used to use it when I was talking to the States a lot, but I use a local VoIP product now.
You can, you're talking about sales. I mean, the basic product is free, but what they're selling then is add-ons to it, like being able to call out into the normal phone network and being able to accept calls in from the normal phone network. So you pay for a Skype out service or a Skype in number. Is that...
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Mm. I paid, I think, $20 for one of those, and I think I've used 3 cents of it.
Yeah, I did the same.
It'll probably expire before I use it all.
A long while ago, just to find out how it all worked, yeah. I mean, you can see how it would be useful if you were, you know, running a business that had a lot of contact with the United States and you had a Skype number, you know, that was a US local number that people could call. But, yeah, you'd have to be in that sort of specific situation to find a lot of value in it, I would have thought.
I sort of think that with the advent of ADSL2 technology, the faster broadband technology, the voice over IP stuff seems to just work now. Whereas back in the good old days of ADSL1, you had to like be doing nothing else to get a really crystal clear VoIP
Skype
call.
Skype does actually do other things. So there's obviously video conferencing built into it. There was also some whiteboarding, and I'm not sure whether that's still in the product or not. But there was some share screening applications, and there was an API to build other things into it, which I believe was scrapped recently.
Yeah, they've just dropped that. They said because of lack of interest, they've decided that they're going to drop that. So,
and there's a lot of social aspect to Skype as well. Just you can set up so you have a profile and people can find people that have similar interests in other parts of the world and just make random contact with them over Skype, things like that. So,
well, don't you hate that? If you've got your client run up and some person you've never heard of wants to...
Some random.
...phone home, think, yeah, go, thanks.
Yeah, generally you don't get it if you've turned off that particular option, but if you haven't gone into your settings and have left that switched on by mistake, then, yeah, you'll get random people trying to talk
ringing
to you,
to talk to you.
From Israel or somewhere odd. So, not that Israel's that odd, but yeah, it's an odd place to get a phone call from when you're in Australia.
When you're living in Australia, yeah. It's like, oh, that guy's name's Andrew. My name's Andrew too. I might ring him. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure we'll have something in common.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My Skype Lite beta still doesn't work.
Oh.
It still calls. It still makes a...
This is on your portable...
Yeah. On my HTC phone, still makes a phone call to a gateway. Doesn't let me actually use the data network to make a VoIP call, which is what I would have thought voice over IP was all about.
There's been no upgrade in the Android market?
No upgrade. With the operating system?
For
Skype. I'll have a look now. I'll let you know. I'll see if there's any upgrades available. I don't think so. You were also talking about, when I wasn't in a couple of shows ago, about an upgrade to the
You've moved away from
Android.
Cupcake to...
Yeah, Cupcake to the next
to
one.
Donut.
Donuts, yeah. Donut not yet available on the phone network that I'm using, which is 3 in Australia. I've checked for updates, but it says you are running... the current version, 1.5, which is what's current. So I'll keep trying. I'll let you know when I get I'm donut enabled.
Very good. Be interesting to see. I think it's got some good battery stuff in it, because I think it was very disappointing. The
I was about to say the same thing on your behalf, actually.
Thanks, JD.
Yeah, you got more than 6 phone calls a day out of it yet?
Yeah, look, it has its days. It has its moments. It's not too bad, but sometimes... Yeah, you get to the end of the day and it's just dying and you think, no, if I had a Nokia or something, I'd be getting 3 days out of this.
Yeah. Well, the good news is the first 4th generation Android-based smartphone may arrive by 2010. Just when we thought it was safe to go into the water with the 3rd generation stuff, you know, apart from the fact that there are some phones that just simply don't work, there are the Android-based stuff for 4G is going to come. And this is after taking... or talking to wireless carriers, handset makers and analysts believe that in 2010 we're going to start seeing all this new whiz-bang high-speed stuff, which means absolutely nothing to voice, but to data it's absolutely everything. So we'll get our Google Analytics and our maps and our this and our that all much quicker and our email quicker and stuff like that. So
that'll be good.
And I guess that's really what Mark's been rolling out over in Boston at the moment. Sprint, I think, in particular, is one of the companies which I think he's doing some subcontracting for at the moment, and they're going to be turning it on, obviously, fairly shortly. But 4G, I don't know, has it? I don't think many people have cottoned on to 4G. They're still coming to terms with 3 or 3.5G, aren't they? Especially some of the carriers. And what about the VHA stuff? They got rid of some of their call centres, I noticed, too.
Is
the merger of, because of the merger of Vodafone and Hutchison's,
which is a lot of their... Their business units are duplicated now, are they?
And there's 450 people in a call centre in Melbourne that were currently told that, thanks, it's been fun, but...
Oh, made redundant.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. When did that happen, during the week?
Last week, I think it was. Might have been the week before. It was one of those things I thought, oh, here we go. This is the beginning of the end of a lot of the individual sort of groups that do this sort of thing. But then on the other hand, we've got the merger of these two companies, which are going to make it... VHA will be the second biggest carrier in Australia. Probably, I think it even has more... mobile spectrum than Telstra does. I could be wrong with that, but it puts it up there. One of the big companies. So
that's interesting, isn't it?
It'll be interesting to see. And then you've got they'll have to clean up all this stuff, like with 3 at the moment that roams with Telstra. Well, I don't think that'll sort of see.
No, yeah, but no, if exactly. they've got their own larger network that by
it'll
dragging
never roam.
In yeah mm. by dragging in the Virgin network, then yeah, hopefully it'll. It won't need to roam so often, so...
Yeah.
Will they be a serious competitor for Next G?
Who knows? maybe.
Well, they will be.
If they roll out 4G.
If Telstra don't get any bandwidth.
Well, that's the thing too. If they don't separate, they'll be a good competitor. If not,
what are the odds of that happening?
Absolutely.
None.
Absolutely. Arnet. Remember Arnet? They're the backbone behind all the universities and stuff. AARNet, as they are known. They're looking to go to 100 gigabits per second on their little network. See, this is really good if you're with universities. They've got really big pipes between all their institutions. Us mere mortals that have to rely on ADSL2 carriers and things like that.
They always have had their own good infrastructure set up between campuses.
Well, that's where the internet started, really, wasn't it? In the military/government/educational/mostly educational. Yeah. Australia's academic research network, AARNet, will skip the planned network upgrade to 40 gigs and go straight to 100 gigs. Why not, if you can? Three of our Three of Arnet's research shareholders, the University of New South Wales, the ANU in Canberra, and the University of Queensland in Brisbane, have invested in 10 gigabit per second links. And the CEO, Chris Hancock, said that the CSIRO, the University of Melbourne, and Monash University are also in the midst of upgrading to the same speed.
Very good.
So that'd be good. They'll be able to get spam around faster. Isn't that how that works now?
Spam around faster. It's the Australian Academic and Research Network.
Yep.
That Arnet or AARNet, it's been around for years and years and years. It was a private network that was originally set up between university campuses, I think.
That's right, yeah, pre-internet, yeah.
Yep, definitely pre-internet.
Do any of the schools get access to that? How do the schools, like as in government and private schools around Australia, do they access not directly, through a schools net or something?
Not directly through that, no. They have a separate ADSL-based broadband network that they connect to that has its own backbones.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I often wondered how that worked.
Do they still hang off VIC-1, the
They did network? Last time I knew anything about it, but that may well be completely out of date by now. I'll see what I can find out.
Because they'd have to have some fairly serious firewalls, I would imagine, to protect the young people of the world that would be using those sort of networks.
Yeah, they try hard.
Yeah, but I wonder if Mr. Conroy...
So do the kids
Conroy's
trying to get out, to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So... Anyway, what else has been happening in the world this week? There's the Microsoft news, as we discussed earlier on. We've got the news coming out that 2010 for Microsoft Office web apps is coming out. And you guys, do you use any of Office technology, or are you just an Outlooker or anything like that? Or
Office web technology?
Yeah, well, even...
My good lady wife uses Outlook Web Access. She lives on that when she's away from the office. She's always looking at her Outlook mail and her calendars and things over the internet from a web browser.
Yeah, I do that too, but it doesn't let you connect to second accounts, so it's a bit of a disappointment for me.
Have you got more than one work account where you're connecting?
Yes,
do
I
you?
Have several.
JD, this doesn't surprise me. But
can't you achieve that by hacking the URL? I'm sure you can achieve it.
Can you? We have to show me later. Okay.
I'll see what I can find out.
Nothing like a snappy SQL injection attack on your own Microsoft your own Exchange server.
That's good. Very good. At least you can do it. It's the main thing, isn't it? So that will fix that exploit.
Oh, dear. We'll have a bit of fun after the show.
How about this is also an interesting sort of thing. Everyone's turning green these days. Rather than being charged by the bandwidth, charged by the kilowatt being used. Now, this is pretty cute, I thought. I don't know how well it'll work, but AC3, which is a mob in Sydney, their pricing model reflects the density and green IT concerns. Sydney-based hosting company has started charging its customers based on a per-kilowatt basis, moving away from the traditional per-rack rental model. That's obviously if you have a VPN or they're looking after your server technology.
Right.
The company, which is half-owned by the New South Wales government and several universities, has installed power usage readers to measure how much power each customer uses within the data centre in a given month. Customers are charged on a per-kilowatt basis, a bit like getting your electricity bill. Wonder if you can get on United Energy, by the way.
So is this a factor that's taken into consideration with the billing, or is it the only thing that they're being billed for?
The only thing they're being billed for is the energy consumption.
Ah. So if you put a very efficient server into their rack, you get cheap hosting.
Well, I guess so, doesn't it? Because if you're being charged by the per kilowatt and you're not using that.
But that's assuming you get to choose what hardware they're going to use for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
Hmm.
The per kilowatt pricing scheme has one fallback, however. Should a customer not switch on its equipment at all, they will still be charged a standard minimum monthly fee of $1,100 per rack. So regardless of how, you know...
Space and heat.
Yeah. So, but maybe that's the way it's going to go. If bandwidth becomes cheap and free and easy, like everyone sort of... I think you one day recently, sort of in the last 2 years, said, Dr. Ron, our kids will be laughing at the fact that we had to pay for bandwidth one
day.
Yeah,
well, it's going to approach zero, isn't it? It's going to be heading towards being...
Maybe this is the way to charge
being
for
free.
It.
Yeah, and well, it's interesting because this is probably the thing which is costing... who's the hosting provider, sorry?
AC3.
Yeah, this is probably the thing that AC3, it's costing them money, is power. They're not, you know, they've probably... But they can budget for a fixed amount of bandwidth. They know what their bandwidth is going to cost.
Well, maybe the cost of energy is going up, so maybe they're starting to cater for that before it gets too far down the track.
They know what their equipment's going to cost. They can write the equipment off, like, you know, fairly easily. The variable, which does cost the money, is power consumption.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just trying to think, in a large server, in a rack like that, what is most of the power going to be going towards? Is it going to be cooling fans in a machine? Like, if you had to break it up, like, percentage, where does the power go in a computer? Most of it's going to be, I would say, like, mechanical, like, little motors, like the fans.
Yeah, and some of it's going to be used no matter how busy the machine is.
That's right.
So the trick will be to get most advantage out of this would be to use virtual technology, so virtual machines, to get as close to 100% utilization of your hardware as possible.
Because the power consumption won't change, but it's going to be distributed over...
Yeah, so you're not wasting power, but you're getting more hosts per actual server or per CPU.
Do you reckon you get peak and off peak?
Well, I reckon you could, but it's going to depend on the...
Well, CPU usage at 2 in the morning is cheaper. Yeah. It's like hot water. Hey,
The company involved, just before you move on, it's apparently half owned by the New South Wales government and some universities. Is that that might be a clue as to the motivation. It might be a government push to be greener.
Absolutely. Speaking of nothing related to that whatsoever, Rupert Murdoch is trying it on with everybody at the moment and trying to get them people to pay for news again. He was a firm advocate of the fact that the journalistic companies, the news agencies, were very quick to actually put all their hard-earned efforts and love up online for free for people to come and take, that maybe that model is no longer sustainable.
Well, this is, despite Dr. Ron's dismissive whatever, which...
It's all right, he thought the moonwalk was a scam too, so don't worry about
it. So, this is a serious problem these days, is that, because we're getting our information online, we're not going and buying newspapers, and we're not even watching the 6 o'clock news on Channel 9 anymore.
No, for obvious reasons.
Then who is paying for serious journalism to be done in Australia?
The government broadcasters at the moment probably about the only people that would be, because...
And their budgets are being slashed left, right and centre to do more stuff online and to do digital channels and to do this and that and the other thing. And digital radio and digital television, so...
Oh, yeah, they just want content.
That's right.
How accurate it'll be another thing.
This is starting to become a huge problem in Australia and in other developed countries, where we used to have... a serious cohort of professional journalists who would do a really good job. They would research a story. They'd check their facts. You know, if it was printed in, you know, one of the big broadsheet newspapers, you could probably, you know, read that with a fair amount of confidence. Whereas these days, it's just churned out. They've got less journalists because they're getting less revenue. And they've got more deadlines. They've got to get more content into more places, so not just into the newspaper, but they've got to feed this website continuously, 24 hours a day. And the quality, it's turned into what some commentators have called churnalism, where it's just churned out. You know, press release in just gets turned into an article on the website in 5 minutes, and none of the serious investigation is being done.
Add stock library photo and away you go.
Correct.
But they're still making lots of money, Graham. There's advertisements coming to me on my... Mr. Murdoch sends me an email every day with news. I get all advertisements and pop-ups and
they're not making nearly as much from that as they used to make from selling classifieds in the Saturday paper. It's just their revenue streams are dropping.
What, despite the fact that these advertisements and commercials can be interactive and they can have audio and they can flash at me and they can require me to click on things.
Yeah, but you can also block them too, Dr. Ron, and that's...
I don't block any advertisements. I just, if they're clever enough to get through and clever enough to stop me from closing them before I notice what they are.
Let me talk to you about my favourite ad blocker after the show.
Well, I don't use the ad blocker that you guys use, the main commercial one, but I'll tell you what, if something jumps out and fills up my screen and or plays music at me or makes loud noises, I look at where that's come from, I track down what server that's come from, and I put it in the host file and block it completely so that that'll do the trick. My machine.
I do two things when that happens. I make a very definite, conscious effort not to look at the ad, not to listen to the ad,
yes.
Completely ignore it so I don't know what it is it's saying or doing or speaking or showing me.
And the second thing
I do is I close it so it has no effect on me.
Yeah.
But you've already served it. They've got their click. They've got.
They haven't
money.
Got the click. They haven't got it. Well,
no, they've served it. They've got an impression.
Got their page impression.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. I understand. Yeah,
There was a report during the week I noticed that iPhone users in particular, given they're close to my heart, are actually renowned for
those that haven't gone to 301.
Yeah, 3.1.
3.1. Sorry.
Are not clicking through on ads. So in fact, in the mobile media, at least in the Apple world. I guess it's because of bandwidth and you're talking about mobile broadband here, but people are not going to the ads.
Well, that's
good. On my mobile device, I particularly hate ads because it's costing me a fortune to download them. Yeah.
Yeah. But you just subscribe to anything, I've heard. You get all these sorts of things going through.
Thanks, Telstra. Yeah, good.
Anyway, Rupert's looking at charging around about $2 a week to access, certain features or certain publications such as the Wall Street Journal and things like that.
For if mobile I pay Mr. Murdoch $2 a week to access the Wall Street Journal, will I get it ad-free, commercial-free, interruption-free?
I know.
Well, if you buy the Wall Street Journal, you still get the ads,
don't you? Yeah.
Just give it. Send him an email, rupert@newscorp.com.
I will. I'll do it now.
Okay, that'd be good. See if he responds. That'd be good.
Is he on Twitter?
He might log into the chat room. He comes in from time to time with some of our listeners. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is going to be back with Odds Podcadget and Website of the Week.
And just Mr. Murdoch.
And Mr. Murdoch. Graham, one thing I must say, CD software that you spoke about last week in to download is absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
It's Nero free and it works. It did trick me for one thing. When I was making a video file, you actually got to drag the folder in, not the individual files in. But once I worked that out, that was really good. So guys and girls, if you're looking to get some software which is free to burn on your laptop, on your desktop, or whatever.
Not only free, but free. It's GPL. It's open source.
Yeah.
Infra Recorder.
And it's absolutely brilliant. So we've converted the whole office over to that.
Fantastic.
And Nero is now a thing of the past. No more nasty,
annoying
stuff.
You got very angry about Nero on the program last week.
I did. Mm. Yep.
I still use Nero. I don't think it's that bad.
What version?
An older version, maybe.
Wait till you get up to some of the new versions.
Really?
Yeah, but you're still using Windows 95 on some of your machines, Dr. Ron, so you've probably got a bit to go.
Maybe.
Don't install Nero past about version 6.
I'll tell you what I'm using. So Infra Recorder, you've got it open there.
Yeah.
Just be quick here, my friend. What are you using?
No, I don't. I haven't got it on the netbook here, but I'll let you know.
Take a break, back with more in a moment. Suffering Suck Attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio. The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter.
But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Siphone i68 smartphone is an iPhone clone. Have you seen the iPhone clones? Some of them are...
No. I didn't know there was one. I thought Apple would have been onto that very quick smart.
There are a lot of illegit iPhones around.
Yeah, they get churned out in China and
I'd imagine
those sorts of places. This has not one but two SIM card slots.
Which
is really clever.
That's a good idea, isn't it?
There should be more phones with two SIM card slots.
There should. Long-time friend of the program, James, recently travelled to Singapore. He bought his i68 from the mecca of all gadget lovers, Sim Lim Square in Singapore.
I love that place.
Yeah,
boy,
isn't it great?
You can empty your bank account there in one pale afternoon, let me tell you.
Look, James went trolling around Sim Lim and he saw this iPhone clone, the i68 smartphone. It's unlocked, so it works on any service provider. The only downside is it's GSM only. Here we are talking about 3G and 4G, and this thing's only GSM, but there you go. What I liked about Andrew was the dual SIM card function. There's two slots in the side. When you make a call on the keypad, instead of pressing dial or send, there's like a dial 1 button and a dial 2 button, so you nominate which SIM card the call's going out on.
very sensible.
There's even a dual signal strength meter, so you can see how the two networks compare in signal strength.
You can see you can see why they haven't gone to 3G, haven't you? Because that'd too, be hellish.
of course, it's got SMS, it's got MMS, it's got calendar functions, it has a 2-megapixel camera, a big rechargeable battery, and you can connect your i68 to your computer via USB. I do, yes. there's mixed reviews about it online, but have a look for cheapest chips for $100, the Siphone i68 smartphone.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website, www.helipads.org, H-E-L-I-P-A-D-S.
Tells you where helicopters land,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, if you're a bit of an aviation buff, and let's face it, as many of our listeners are, this is a website which lists many, not all, but many helipads in Australia, and it includes such information as the helipad's location, its elevation, the maximum allowable mass of the aircraft that's going to land on it, it's got lighting information. There's even radio frequencies listed that apply to each particular helipad. There's also photographs and a search engine, so you can sort by city, state, town, category. Look for helipads at mine sites, hospitals, ovals, airports, whatever. It's great for aviation buffs, great for radio communications enthusiasts as well. So that's our website of the week, Andrew, helipads.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sake, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Pirated copies of Dan Brown's latest tome, The Lost Symbol, can already be obtained for free from illegal download sites 2 days after the book went on sale around the world. Publisher Random House today conceded that book piracy was unavoidable in the digital age, but said that it was doing everything it could to track down the culprits. The book, which went on sale on Tuesday last week, is now available on a number of sites, including the Pirate Bay.
Them in or something,
and they must have scanned the entire book and made it available for download. Mr. Brett Osmond, the Marketing and Publicity Director at Random House Australia, said, "It appears that we're living in a world where piracy is to some extent unavoidable. As the book industry becomes more digital, we're probably going to see more of this stuff." My good lady wife purchased the new Dan Brown novel. She's already finished it, I think, too.
Well, she was the one.
Yeah, no, she loves them. All the,
the pages out, bung it through the scanner and up online.
Yeah, yeah, put it up online. Yeah, The Lost Symbol, that's cool. So all the other ones were a lot of fun, too. The you know, Digital Fortress and what was the really famous one that everyone used
the
to...
Da Vinci.
Da Vinci
one.
Code, yeah. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
next week, guess what? 250 shows.
How good's that?
250.
Are you going to come in, Dr. Ron, or are you going to just go off and do what you,
you
do?
You know, I might just go off. See what happens. No, I'd love to come in. We'll play it by ear and see what happens. But 250 shows, that's a real landmark.
You never know. You never know who might come in next week. My goodness. All right. See you next week,
We'll be
guys.
Announcing the winner of our Wacom tablet giveaway.
Quick, get those in. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.